And welcome to the Total Soccer Show. My name is Taylor Rockwell, and today we have a different sort of Total Soccer Show episode for you, a very special Total Soccer Show episode. It's a get-to-know-your-host edition of the show. Graham Ruthven, Joe Lowry, Ryan Bailey have already done the previewing for this summer's European Championship. They're also going to be joining me to cover the tournament itself. We're going to be putting out daily review shows, and with the frequency with which you're about to be hearing from all of us, we felt like it might be a good idea for you to get to know your host a little bit. So if you're new to the show, or if you've been listening for a long time, but you want to hear about Graham's experiences at weddings, we're going to talk about that later on, then this is the episode for you. And in fact, with that in mind, let's get to some introductions. First up, all the way, since I've already mentioned him, all the way from an intermittently active construction site somewhere in Scotland, it's Graham Ruthven. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Taylor. How are you? The construction site is a little bit quieter at this time of night, which is a good thing. I'm not having to compete for airtime with with like a, what do you call those, a steamroller sort of thing. Yeah. So they're packed away for the evening.
Graham, I always try to write like the quick introductions just so I don't forget them. And I will say it was a difficult one to write and not make it sound like you were squatting in a construction site. You do have a home there, right?
Yeah. We have. All right, cool. We pay to live here, and there are walls and a roof and a bed, but. It's a new house, so there's not much more than that, to be honest, at the moment.
I'm not going to lie. You have not convinced me, because you described the most basic house you could possibly... Like, yeah, there's a roof here and walls. That doesn't really, like, give me the specifics I need, Graham, to know that you're not just, like, living in a backhoe or something.
Yeah, I just described generic house A, and you're just going to have to take my word for it that I do actually legally live here. All right. And my name is on the documents.
All right, perfect. I will take you at your word. We have Graham in Scotland with hopefully better weather than it has been recently. But on the opposite side of the weather spectrum, we have a man who doesn't believe in seasons because he's chosen to live in the desert. It's Joe Lowry. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Taylor. I'm really excited to play the Newlywed Game, or the Total Soccer Show version of the Newlywed Game, with all of you. I'd like to say Graham's house and Ryan's made-up Eastern European friend, I think they're about on the same level for the last couple of shows we've done.
I will say, I met Joe for the first time in person for MLS Cup in Seattle, and I do think that's where my memory of Joe being confused by seasons, or just sort of, like, not used to seasons, comes in. Is that correct, Joe? Are you actually sort of, like, not used to the changing of the season?
Oh, not at all. We have two seasons here in Arizona. We have summer and we have, it winter, but it's really summer. It's just light fall for everyone else. So yeah, I mean, going up to Seattle fall. And it's wet and it's raining and it's a little foggy and it's cold. What is that all about, guys? I'm not conditioned for this. I don't know what's going on. I'm only 100 degrees or higher. I'm right at home. Not that I like it, but I'm right at home, Taylor.
It didn't occur to me how it would be very foreign for Joe to go to Seattle, but less so for Graham to go to Seattle. Graham, have you been there? Is that where your fake home also is?
No, I've not been to Seattle, but I have been to Portland. And weirdly, I think I've already mentioned it was scorching weather when I went to Portland, which I don't think is customary for Portland.
All right. Well, I'm glad we all have some connection. You've been in the U.S. Ryan lives in the United States, though he is, I believe, a North Carolina native who uses a fake British accent. Ryan Bailey, thank you for taking the time to be here today.
Hey, y'all. How you doing?
That's well done, man. Have we ever gotten into why it is that you live in North Carolina, Ryan?
Because
I don't think I've ever asked that.
One day someone said, do you want to live where it rains every day, or would you like to come somewhere where it's really nice and you can have a much bigger house for much cheaper than where you live currently? And I said, yes, let's do that, please.
All right. And now North Carolina it is. Have you picked up, like, are there any southern idioms or southern dialects that you do enjoy, or have you kind of maintained the Britishness?
I say y'all sometimes, non-ironically. And I think that the time when I've come the most American is when I'm at a drive-thru, which I do rather frequently, I'm ashamed to say. Because if I say, oh, hello, my good man, could I have a half and half iced tea, my good sir, what? They don't quite get it through the window of the drive-thru. So I have to kind of, hey, yeah, I'll get a half and half tea, I'll get some tomato in my sandwich, and I sort of slip into that transatlantic thing. Yeah, it's embarrassing.
Wow. I was not ready for that. Have your parents been to visit North Carolina? And if so, what were their impressions of your American accent and everything else?
My mom's been over, yes, and she likes it here. She understands why we live here. She sees it's very nice here indeed. Nicer than South London, the not very nice part of South London, which I grew up in. Yeah, and I think the weirdest thing is because I've got two kids. I've got a five-year-old and an eight-year-old who are both born here. So they have a very – and they go to a British school here. So they've got this very transatlantic – you know how Kelly Osbourne used to speak in the Osbournes NTV show?
Yes.
They have that accent where it's kind of halfway across the Atlantic.
A Lewis Hamilton.
So they don't – so when we go home, like, they definitely don't sound British. And when they're here, they definitely don't sound American. It's odd.
When I was a little kid, I remember being sad to find out that you couldn't, like, it was not acceptable for you to just adopt accents, because I really did, honestly, really did want a Scottish accent, and I had this idea of, like, I'll move to Scotland, and I'll live there, and then I'll come back with an accent, and then I learned that that's what the worst people do. So,
like Steve McLaren.
Exactly, just like Steve McLaren. Yeah, so thank you all for bearing with me as I mildly... embarrass you and introduce you at the same time. I have some questions for our hosts about themselves, about how they got into soccer, various things like that. But first, again, for people who are new, a quick bit of background about the show you're listening to. The Total Soccer Show started with myself and Daryl Grove. We did it as a radio show here in Richmond, Virginia, where I am from and Daryl was living. We transitioned to a podcast. We started it in 2009. And Daryl kept it going when I was abroad for 2 years, and then we did it remotely when I was up in Northern Virginia. He was still in Richmond. We went 5 days a week when I moved back to Richmond, and it's been full-time since then. The show took a pretty big hit when Daryl was diagnosed with cancer in January of 2019, but he kept doing the show with the same positivity, the same levels of warmth, until he passed away in October of 2020. And Ryan, I think, and I had first interacted doing Goalmouth, which was like a daily soccer show that we did with George Qureshi and Brooks Peck. And Ryan had always – his episodes had always made me laugh. No disrespect to everybody else, but Ryan's were the episodes that like made me laugh every single time, so I was really excited to get to work with Ryan a little bit more. And then Joe, I think I've told this story before, but I think Joe just tweeted out one day, like, hey, I'm thinking about starting a podcast. And Daryl and I were like, we got to get on that immediately because we need Joe talking about soccer. And now here Joe is. And then I think Graham initially was on the program to cover La Liga, I think is what we would talk about a lot. And then it sort of occurred to me that like maybe you would also want to talk about other leagues. And now here we are with the three of you doing all the Euro previewing with me and Ryan and Joe stepping in when I had paternity leave, such as it was, and they kept the show going and producing it. And now we're going to cover a major tournament together, and it's going to be a big one for us. I think that's the kind of gist of the Total Soccer Show. I'll go around the horn really quickly to ask, starting with Graham. Graham, for you, like, what is your quick background? How did you get into writing about soccer, covering soccer?
Yeah, so I guess my first thing that I did in terms of covering football was, so I'm a Stirling Albion fan. Stirling Albion are a very small team in Scotland. They're currently in the bottom division in Scottish football. So I'll forgive you.
What is the bottom division in Scottish football?
So that's League Two. There is also a Highland League and a Lowland League and an East of Scotland League, which you can fall into through a playoff. But the Highland League is on the same level as, you know, Quidditch or something. But yeah. So basically I had an idea that there's not really that much exciting here, but I had an idea that I wanted to write about football for a job. And started doing some shifts for the local newspaper. When I was a teenager, you would either go to Stirling Albion games on Saturday or you would go to the shopping centre. So I would go to Stirling Albion games. That seemed a better thing to do with your time on a Saturday, go to the football. And then my first kind of paid gig, very, very, very strangely, was writing for NewYorkTimes.com, which Andrew Dass, who you will know as on Twitter, the guy who forced MLS to publish their kickoff times.
God bless him. God bless Andrew Dass.
Yep. Yep. So I don't really have an explanation. I just emailed Andrew and said, look, as the exuberance of youth not really knowing my place in the world, just said, would you let me write for NewYorkTimes.com? And he let me do that until they hired someone professional in Rory Smith, who's a lot better than I. But, and then I guess the next kind of big event in my professional life was I started working at Scottish TV in Glasgow, which is why I live here. I no longer work there, but I met my wife, who was a newsreader there. And so, yeah, that's how I now live in Glasgow. So that's the short version.
And is a newsreader the same thing as an anchor?
Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah. Like the person who sits behind the desk and reads the headlines and so on. She's not the BBC, but yeah,
that makes
sense. STV. Yep.
That's probably like common knowledge as well. Just to me for a minute, I was like, is that like a fact checker? So I'm glad I
imagined it as like the person reading the teleprompter into the anchor's ear, which is a totally unnecessary step for them, the anchor, to have to repeat what's being told to them in their ear instead of just reading it. So Taylor, I'm really glad you asked that question.
Graham, just to be clear, your wife can read, right? She doesn't need someone to tell her the news that she then repeats.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a pretty big, absence of a skill for a television anchor if she couldn't read, I guess, the auto cue. But
Graham, does she only read exactly what's on the prompter?
Well, like Anchorman, or yeah.
Has she ever been very rude about the city that she broadcasts in?
I mean, we've not tested that yet, but I might get one of her colleagues to test that at some point, just to see.
Graham, what was your, like, if you had one, what was your sort of first, like, oh, wow, I'm covering, like, a big game or a big moment, or the first person you sort of interacted with that made you realize that you had moved up a level?
I guess when I was at Scottish TV, you end up, so I would go to the Celtic and Rangers press conferences every single week on a Thursday or on a Friday. And in Scotland, Celtic and Rangers, as some of the listeners might know, it's difficult to stress just how much they dominate life here. Every single day that there's a talking point to do with Celtic Rangers. And so I guess kind of getting on first name terms with, well, initially it was Neil Lennon at Celtic, and then Brendan Rodgers at Celtic, and Rangers had a series of managers. I'm struggling to remember any of them, but kind of laterally Mark Warburton, who was at Rangers. I guess that was a little bit of a weird one. Or I guess through my job in the local newspaper, I covered Andy Murray, because he's from my local area, and Andy Murray is my absolute hero, to the point where if my daughter had been my son, his middle name was going to be Andrew after Andy Murray. So talking to Andy Murray at press conferences and stuff was a little bit of a, I was a bit starstruck then, I guess.
All right. And the final thing for you for this part, at least, it's not a question I had asked you to prepare for. I did give our co-host a few ideas of what I'd be asking about, so they weren't completely blindsided. I don't want to necessarily get into, like, your specific age, but I think a useful thing would be, like, what's a thing that you will likely use as a reference point when talking about soccer? Because I think I bounce around, like, we had a few people note that I used a Temple Grandin reference on a show recently. I think I bounce around a little bit. Is there, like, a thing or two that you probably go to, a TV show, a movie, or something like that, when you are trying to draw comparisons or create analogies?
So something outside of soccer, outside of football.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Simpsons is pretty much my go-to reference for everything in life, not just soccer.
Ryan Bailey nods approvingly, I'm assuming.
Excellent.
Yeah. Simpsons, or, I mean, it was slightly, actually kind of ever so slightly, I think the first one actually might have been out before I was born. I think the second and third one, Back to the Future, I was absolutely nuts about Back to the Future as a kid. Ooh, and still
right,
am.
All right.
I guess those are two reference points.
There we go. My wife just watched Back to the Future for the first time.
What?
And was okay with it, / slightly underwhelmed until I pointed out. Do you all feel like that's the first one for time travel? Like, is that a big one for, like, the time travel genre and don't meet your parents and try not to make out with your mom, that sort of thing?
Classic, you know, classic.
How has your wife gotten this far into her life without seeing Back to the Future? Goodness me, Taylor.
It's a question. It's a fair question, especially since she's seen most of The Real Housewives with some level of regularity. I feel like she's made time for those. She should make time for Marty McFly.
Great
job. Joe, what about you? I feel like Back to the Future might maybe predates you a little bit.
It does predate me. I still am aware of its cultural significance and importance, less so maybe today among current generations. But yeah, I'm not about to disrespect Back to the Future, man.
All right. I would hope not. But Joe Lowry, for you, how did you get into writing about soccer, covering soccer?
I got into soccer in general from this exact show, which is still why I have to pinch myself a lot of the times when I'm coming on to record an episode of this show. And really, I remember the first episode that I hosted. I hosted, Taylor, when you were on paternity leave. I hosted with Jordan Angeli, who's my co-host on MLS Assist. And just that was kind of a surreal moment for me. It was comfortable because she and I had done lots of shows together, but still just this crazy, nerve-wracking thing to think that I'd been given that responsibility. So, yeah, I mean, Taylor, this exact show is how I got interested in soccer in the first place. Listening to you and Daryl talk about soccer and the way that you guys do that influenced me, and I know a lot of other people out there, and how we watch soccer and how we think about soccer. So yeah, I mean, it's all you guys, Taylor.
Dude, I don't think I knew that at all. And you definitely didn't convey that, like, you had any nervousness about hosting the show for the first time. You wrote that was really intentional. Well. I was like, I guess he's just got this. So he doesn't even need any oversight or anything like that. So that's pretty cool to hear, man. Thank you for that.
Yeah, no, of course. And it's so much fun. Like, I still do have to pinch myself that I get to do this. And I freelance. Basically, that's where I'm at right now. So I write and I do podcasts, and it's so fun that I get to do this for a living. And I know it is work, right? You do something so much and that's what you're getting paid for. It is work. And so you lose a little bit of that joy, but I try so hard to not lose that joy because I recognize how cool this is to get to this. Graham sending an email to the editor of the an editor at the New York Times and getting to write about soccer, and then us getting to come on and talk about it, or me getting to write for The Athletic or for wherever. It's so cool, man. And I'm thankful that I get to do this.
Dude, well said. Well said. Thank you for that. And for you, if you do have like a point of reference, a thing that you would use when you're drawing analogies, trying to explain a thing that happened, is there anything that jumps to mind?
This isn't
just
really...
Twilight, all the Twilight books for you?
Oh, gosh, no. Oh, my goodness gracious. Ah, I don't even know how to come back from that. I think for me... These shows are so not tied to my generation, because I know, Taylor, you and Daryl did the all Parks and Rec 11. Did you do all, like, The Office 11 episode at one point?
I can't remember. I don't think so. I don't think we did, surprisingly. We've done Star Wars. We did Marvel.
Yeah.
We've read some other. Oh, we did Always Sunny. I think we did Always Sunny in there.
So for me, I guess it's Parks and Rec. I enjoy watching Parks and Rec and Community. Like a lot of those NBC sitcoms that aired from the late 2000s, I guess, to the early 2010s. That's my comfort sometimes outside of soccer, just what I'll do to pass the time from a hobby standpoint. So yeah, there'll be some of those references, which I recognize are not unique in any way.
And I feel like this is an important one to ask. Where are you on your Simpsons knowledge? Because I think you are surrounded by three people who have done their fair share of Simpsons viewing over the years.
Yeah, I'm one of the characters' name is Bart, right? That's about they're yellow. They have like weird pointy things on their heads, or like their heads are pointy. I got nothing, man.
Wow. All right.
Sorry.
All right. So Joe is aware that there's a character named Bart and they're yellow with pointy heads. Ryan, how do you feel about that one?
Still reeling. I don't know if I can carry on. It's their hair, Joe. The spiky stuff is their hair.
Oh, man. But why is it? I don't want to offend any of you guys or any other Simpsons fans out there. So, Taylor, just start talking and I'll stop talking and we'll forget this all ever happened.
I think the answer is the Tracy Ullman show didn't have money to pay animators who were particularly adept when it came to animating. So you got...
Which you can see from season one.
Yes, you definitely can. Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Ryan Bailey. Hello, Ryan. Hello. We know that you will reference some Simpsons. I'll ask you about further references later on. But for you, how did you start covering soccer? Because again, like, I think Graham has the journalism sort of background. Joe has the, I would say, analysis background. And then Ryan, I feel like you're the face, Ryan. That's what I'm saying.
Vibes. My background's vibes. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, you're the presenter, aren't you? You do the video component.
Yeah, that's only, I'd say, a relatively recent part of my broadcast/journalism career. So my first piece of published soccer journalism was in 2001 in the Wimbledon FC match day program. I wrote what turned out to be a two-page spread about my favorite game I've ever been to. And well, in 2001, I would have been 15 or so. It was about a West Ham game at Upton Park where we were 3-0 down at halftime and we won 4-3. And while I was at school, I wrote this thing and it got published in the program. I got a taste for it that day, Tay-Tay. So I went, carried on with my life for a little while, went to college. And when I got out of college, I got an internship with PricewaterhouseCoopers in finance and assurance and that kind of stuff. And I was about to sign on a dotted line and become an accountant for the rest of my life. And my now wife was like, that's not what you want to do, is it? You want to do something else. You don't want to look at a spreadsheet for the rest of your life. And I attribute her intervention at that point to the way my career has gone. And I'm very grateful for it because I decided to go and do a journalism qualification, which I did. I did a postgraduate qualification. Interestingly, there were two professional soccer players in my class, in the class I did, which was in Wimbledon, which you'll probably hear more about as this episode goes on. One of them was Simon Garner, who was Blackburn's all-time top scorer before Alan Shearer, and Kevin Betsy, who played for Wickham at the time, who's a lesser known name. But outside of that, I got my first proper paid writing gig, which was at the non-league paper, which is still going. It's obviously, it does what it says on the tin. It's a weekly newspaper about non-league teams. So that was what I first did as in journalism, in writing match reports at very, very small stadiums where only a few hundred people would go, where you'd have no internet and it would be very stressful. 40 minutes, I think, no, it was less than 40 minutes after final whistle, you had to file your piece with the non-league paper. More often than
did
not,
you have to do it down the phone, Ryan.
Yes, exactly.
I did a few like that down the phone, which was a nightmare.
Yeah, what is that? What does that mean?
So that
down
literally
the phone?
Means, Joe, you've written your match report. There's no internet because
so you're reading
like,
it.
It's this is like
see the job that you envisaged for my wife as a newsreader. That's the job.
Yeah,
full circle, baby. Full circle.
You would try and find some cell phone signal at this place in the middle of nowhere, Joe, and then you try and down a crackly line to a landline in an office building, both of which seem very archaic now. You'd read your match report to the sub-editor who would put it onto the page of the newspaper. So that's basically where I got my start off. I then went on and did a bunch of soccer journalism. I got a lot into betting writing in the years that followed. I moved to the US in 2011, and that's when I sort of moved, Taylor, more into the broadcasting area. I started working with MLS, with Major League Soccer. We launched a YouTube channel called Kick TV, and that went on for a few years. And
I actually forgot you did Kick stuff.
We sort of helped produce and start that channel. I was on camera there for the first couple of years as well, basically until my first daughter was born, and I didn't want to schlep to New York every week for 3 or 4 days a week. That's brought me, Taylor, to this very moment talking to you right now, and it's an honor and a privilege.
Well, right back at you, first of all. Second of all, what were your like sort of favorite segments to do when it came to Kick TV?
Anything with Jimmy Conrad was a lot of fun because he's obviously a very fun character and he's got a lot of energy. I think it's good. I used to do a show called The Kickback, where it was basically I'd looked at weird and wonderful moments of the game. I used to really enjoy writing that because I just go absolutely bonkers with the puns and stuff like that, which as you know me, I like to do that kind of thing. But that got me into the broadcast side of things, I'd say. I was very much just a soccer writer up to that point. And then I figured out, oh, I could actually put a studio in my house and I can do a podcast studio and I can do all these kind of things. And I really enjoy doing the on-camera stuff, probably more than the writing, I would say, as well. And the same goes for the podcasting, actually.
Yeah, I definitely enjoy the podcasting more than the writing, because the writing requires sitting down and finding structure, not just being able to ramble on and on like I'm doing right now. That does then, like, lead me to, like I asked Ryan this a little bit. Ryan, I'll ask you more about it in a bit. But for Graham, for you, like, what are the types of stories, what are the types of things that you would like to do with soccer or you wanted to do with soccer? What got you interested in sort of doing it, or how would you like that to evolve? Because I think for me, I started out writing and just realized, like, there are people who can churn out, like, I shouldn't even say churn, but can just create content with the regularity that's required to put out articles every single day or put out news pieces every single day. And I don't have that diligence. And I also kind of didn't want to write those match reports, didn't want to, like, do it that way. So podcasting made a lot of sense for me. For you, like, what are the types of stories, what are the areas that you find most interesting that you would like to cover, talk more about, read more about, whatever it might be?
Yeah, so I initially, when I came out of university, I went down the very traditional route of doing the whole match report and press conference sort of routine. And look, some people really enjoy that. For me, it was a little bit monotonous, and so I moved much more into feature writing and interviews, although I don't tend to do many interviews now, but analysis and that sort of thing. And that's kind of where I have found my sweet spot is sort of opinion and features. I've been doing that for a number of years now. And I do think one of my, if you want to call it churning out articles, like that's kind of how I would describe what I do. And I'm quite good at that. I can get through like quite a number of articles in a day.
No, it's a skill, man. It's a skill.
So yeah, that's, but most recently I've actually launched a fantasy football company. And so that's the kind of one of the things that going forward the next few years, that's kind of where I want to explore a little bit more is sort of the gamification of soccer a little bit more. I know that's quite different from the journalism path, but we launched our first product for Scottish football last summer, and we've got 60,000 users and sponsors and so on.
What?
So I'm hopefully that's going to be growing, and we're launching more products and so on this year and next year. So yeah, that's what a lot of my focus is going into at the moment.
Starting to feel like I'm maybe not a very good friend, because you've been doing this show for like at least 8 months, and I don't think I knew that. What's the name of the company?
So the company name is Fantasy Monster, and our first product was Fantasy Football Scotland, just purely from the fact that I played the Premier League One, and I knew loads of people who did play the Premier League One in Scotland who were Scottish football fans, and there wasn't a Scottish fantasy football. So that felt like a pretty open goal to me. So
hey Graham, yeah. Graham, buy an ad slot.
That did sound a little bit like an ad, I have to say. I'll close it up. But yeah, that's what I spend quite a bit of my time doing at the moment.
So with the structure of fantasy, like, not surprisingly, as a person who's not good at sort of creating that regular content or writing out that regular content, I am also the type of fantasy player who probably forgets to set the light up the first week, remembers for the second and third week, and then never does it again for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Like, do you think that there is a correlation between your ability to sort of create that content and also track fantasy, or is it more of the daily variety?
I think a little bit of both, but maybe the former you mentioned there, I think there's a correlation between the way I was able to churn out content so regularly has sort of trained me for the fantasy side of things, where like you can't, as when you run it, you can't really give it up after 4 weeks. So yeah, maybe that's a good grounding that I've come into there.
How much do like stats analytics play a part in the fantasy side of things?
Oh, huge. So we've got a partnership with Opta, who we feed their feed directly into the game. But yeah, there's a huge desire for, we launched a whole new kind of stats center in the app around Christmas time. There's a huge correlation between the two.
Joe, are you just like rubbing your hands together over there?
I'm just excited for when Graham is our soccer overlord and controlling everything, because I think that's now what we're headed towards.
I don't know if you should be that excited for that.
I'd be all right with it. But Graham, does that mean that are you like, when you're watching soccer, are you interested in like how players are valued? Are you interested in those kind of big performers who tend to get the fantasy results? Like, does the way you think about fantasy impact the way you think about football?
Yeah, it definitely does. And that's maybe not a good thing. So when I was talking with some friends about this, the Scottish Player of the Year, I just thought it was an absolute stick on that everyone would think it was James Tavernier in Scotland, who had an unbelievable fantasy season. He finished with 300 points, which I think was not quite double, but almost double what the second placed player got. And yet was shocked to find that other people thought other players should be the Player of the Year in Scotland. So yes, maybe I need to tone that down a little bit and move away from the fantasy prism that I view things from. No.
Did you get teased for that at all? Like, was there a, like whatever, nerd, you don't know? Or were people okay with your fantasy approach?
No, they were okay with it. He has had a good season. But I was utterly shocked that there was even a debate. And I guess that comes from my experience with the fantasy app.
Joe, how much of that resonates for you? Because I feel like you have a similar analytical approach sometimes to evaluating players and performances.
Yeah, some of that definitely resonates with me. I'm inclined to look at some of the underlying numbers, expected goals, expected assists, diving into the stats. American Soccer Analysis is a phenomenal website for finding American soccer analysis. You're welcome. So I didn't feel good about that
one
at all.
Right, I got this one. Joe, pay for an ad slot.
Yeah, that was one of the first places I started writing. And so I'm inclined to look into the numbers a little bit more, I think, than most. And that can result in me finding some things that you wouldn't necessarily notice if you're just watching the games. And sometimes it's whatever, nerd. I think I've gotten that on this show in a joking, loving way. But yeah, that's part of it. You accept that when you start diving into the stats and into the data. You accept that.
Has it reached the point for you where it's sort of like if a person makes fun of XG or sort of misinterprets XG, are you past the like, oh, I want to explain it, I want people to get this, and are you more just like, whatever, you don't know what you're talking about, I don't need to engage with you?
Well, it depends on the person's attitude, right, and how they present that. Because if it's not a malicious or if they're just deliberately tossing stats aside, I'm not likely to try to convert them. But if it's a misinterpretation that comes from a genuine mistake, yeah. Like, if they're interested in having that conversation, I'd love to get into some of those things. And there's still so much that I don't know and don't understand. So I'm learning just along with everybody else on this thing. So yeah, it depends on the person and I guess their attitude towards that whole thing.
How does that factor into the way you cover games? So we've got like Turkey, Italy, the first game of the Euros coming up. Like, are you going to consult stats sites? Are you going to try to find those sort of advanced stats to inform your analysis? Or do you, like, which comes first? Do you come up with your, like, perspective on the game and what you thought you saw, and then do you look at the stats and the data? Or do you do it the opposite and sort of look at that to figure out what happened to the game more comprehensively?
So if I'm watching that first game on Friday, or if I'm watching the Champions League final, either way, whatever game I'm able to solely devote my attention to, I'll watch the first half, I'll take a bunch of notes, and then during halftime, I'll poke around and find the stats and write some things down, because I think it gives me a good idea of how the game went. And if there's something that sticks out to me that I didn't notice or I thought would be different, I'll make note of that, and then I'll watch the second half and look at the stats after the game. So they kind of, for me, they go hand in hand with what I've seen. I can either back it up with the numbers, or maybe there's something that's gone horribly wrong with how I've watched the game, and I can switch and look into why what I saw isn't reflected in the numbers. So if I'm able to devote my full attention to one game, that's how I'll do it. If it's Major League Soccer, where there are 13 games a week and there's, well, 13 games a weekend, and there's just way too many teams in that league, then at a certain point you start to use the stats to give you things to look for in that team, because I can't watch however many hours of soccer that would be a weekend and write about it and talk about it. Like, there's just not enough time of the day for that.
And a question for Joe, but I'd also like to hear what Ryan and Graham have to say, is like, what are your, this is a weird one, but it resonates for me, what are your like notes look like? How do you take notes for a game? Are you writing down like basic ideas? Do you take down like what happened in the 13th minute versus the 15th minute, which is kind of what I do? Like, how do you go about watching a game and keeping track of what happened in that game?
So I just pulled up my US-Mexico notes from Sunday night, and I have a bunch of like post-game thoughts at the top that I scribbled after. This is on my computer, so I didn't really scribble. But then I have the US section, and I'll do lineup. I'll do tactics, which are the bigger things I noticed. Then I'll do specific play notes, and then player notes, and then stats at the bottom. And then I'll do the same for the other team. The US section is a lot longer than the Mexico section. But that's my general procedure. Then I'll go back through after, and that's where the things at the top come in. Other major themes that I noticed are things I want to make sure to talk about when we talk about it on the show. But that's my process, Taylor.
And for you, Ryan, are you just picturing the Homer Simpson screaming at the college students, nerds, right now when Joe and I have this conversation?
When I'm looking to take notes, it's just the Homer Simpson thought bubble with the cow playing the fiddle. That's all I've got going on. My note taking process is quite similar, Taylor, to the way I was trained to do it, because in sports journalism, in newspaper journalism, you write the middle section of the report, match report, then you write the top and the bottom, and quite often you have to send the middle section in, like the meat of the action, what happened. So quite similar to you, Taylor, I'll write down this happened in the 18th minute, this happened in the 32nd minute, but then I'll pepper that around that the notes about each team, and I'll have almost like an Arlo White sort of you know, that he does those very pretty looking boards where he has notes about each player, and I sort of build it out from a skeleton of those key moments, and then at the top I'll fill in the headline notes at the end, like you put a headline on a newspaper piece. That's kind of my process, I would say.
And what is your sort of like your area of interest? So Graham talked about fantasy a little bit. Yeah. Joe got into the stats and the analytics. Like, what are you paying attention to most often?
I think it depends on the objective, because I've got quite a broad scope of things I write about soccer for. Like Graham, I do a lot of fantasy work. So then you're looking quite in depth into the stats, and you're looking at areas you wouldn't look at, for example, if you're doing a long form piece. I used to be a columnist for The Athletic, and I wouldn't go heavy on the stats on that kind of thing, for example. And one of the areas I have leaned a lot on is sports betting and betting focused editorial. So then I'm really looking not even at game statistics and player statistics, but patterns. I'm really fascinated by the patterns and the probabilities and head to heads and that kind of stuff. So I'm really interested in numbers, maybe in slightly different or more nuanced ways, if that makes sense.
It does. And it begs a question that I will ask you all, like, generally now, and then we can come back to you later on, but I'll give you some time to think about it. Because again, it's not one that I had really prepared for, but hearing what you all are interested in and the sort of things that you like to talk about, the things you like to cover, I'd also be interested if there are things that you would like to do on the show that we don't do. Like, do you want to have a fantasy corner? Do you want to talk a little bit more about some of the betting odds? Historically, we've shied away from talking about gambling, but I want it to kind of reflect what you all are into. So maybe that'll be the last question. Is there anything that you would like to focus on or sort of try to cover a little bit more, just experiment with during the Euros? But until we get to that, Ryan, I don't think I asked you yet what your sort of cultural reference points might be, or your touchstones when it comes to drawing comparisons, making analogies.
It's all The Simpsons.
That's what I figured.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I figured. Then I'll
Futurama's
go back to Graham.
Got to be in there as well, surely.
Oh, yeah. Any Matt Groening project gets my nod. Yes, basically.
But apart from that weird Netflix one that you did.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't as good.
No, it was not. I forgot about that one, as we all sit in silence.
I forgot. Was it called, like, Enchanted or something?
Yeah, Enchanting, I think it was called, yeah.
Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public. The other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Graham, you talked a little bit about Sterling Albion earlier. For like people who would like to know more about your club loyalties, obviously you've got the Scotland loyalty, but who are the like the teams you support or the club you support, or maybe even like the favorite player historically or currently, just so people get an idea of your rooting interests and what you tend to watch, support, cheer for, that sort of thing. Because I do feel like you've been to like every Scotland game is now what I'm picturing based on that I sent two different clips of two different games, and I think both of them you were like, oh yeah, I was there. So now I'm assuming you're at every single game.
So, well, not quite. I'm a bit of a Laps fan. I used to be a Tartan Army member, and I went to every home game for about 5 or 6 years. And I actually remember the specific game and date that I kind of gave up on going to Scotland games as a fan. There is a reason I remember this date. So another Andy Murray reference. Andy Murray won his first Grand Slam on my 21st birthday, which is the 10th September 2012. And the next day, Scotland were playing Macedonia in a World Cup qualifier. And so I'd been up basically the whole night kind of celebrating Andy Murray. Was feeling a little bit worse for wear by the time I got to Hampden. And Scotland drew, I think, 1-1 at home against Macedonia. And it was just a dreadful, dreadful game. And I just went, yeah, I'm done with this. I'm not coming to these games anymore. So that's why I like today my Scotland shirt arrived with the kind of Euros patches on it, and I tweeted out something along the lines of my bandwagon has arrived, and that is like I am a Laps fan, and that's why I say like it's a little bit of an act that I put on that, you know, I'm this massive Scotland fan. Obviously I'll be supporting Scotland at these Euros, but I have jumped on the bandwagon a little bit. But in terms of teams that I support, or I mean really Stirling Albion's the only one. I've always had a soft spot strangely for the Cosmos. And I went out to a game at Hofstra when they were playing there a number of years ago, 2013 or 14, I think it was. I still actually have the media access band that they gave me on my wrist. It's been on my wrist for
really
8 years.
Is it like microchipped? Is it all fancy like?
No, it's a like a canvas band, and it's very frayed. You can barely tell that it's the Cosmos, but it is the Cosmos. I guess I do kind of in each country, I do tend to have a team that I wouldn't say I'm a fan of or even that I root for, but like I gravitate towards. So they tend to be clubs that are really rooted in, I guess, working class community. So I like the one that springs to mind is like Marseille. I've always had a soft spot for Marseille in French football. And so I guess I kind of, that informs a lot of the teams that an exception to that would maybe be Real Madrid. Again, I wouldn't say I'm a fan or even that I root for them, but when I was growing up in the early 2000s, which were very much my formative years as a soccer fan, they were so much more alluring than Barcelona. And so I guess in that kind of Oasis versus Blur football debate, they were always the one that I gravitated towards, just because they had the Galacticos, the first Galacticos era at that time. And it was a bit of a bucket list thing for me to go to the Bernabeu for a Clásico. And I did that a few years ago. So yeah, I only really have one team that I would say I support, but I do have soft spots for a few teams.
What's your favorite stadium you've been in for a game?
Probably the Bernabeu, actually. I mean, I know it's getting redeveloped now, but it's so, I've been to the Camp Nou as well, and I wasn't very impressed with the Camp Nou, to be honest. It felt really far away from the pitch, and the Bernabeu is so much, it's like the four tiers of the stand are right on top of the pitch, And it's probably one of my favorite stadiums I've been to. I talking about Marseille again, the Velodrome's always, I've not been to the Velodrome yet, and I was supposed to be going for Euro 2016 actually, but that didn't happen. But that's one on my bucket list, my stadium bucket list.
And my final question for you when it comes to your loyalties, your rooting interests, with the current Scotland heading into the Euros, if in a Back to the Future / Bill and Ted's sort of situation, you were able to bring one Scottish player from history into this team to play, who are you bringing in? Not even necessarily like who do they need, but who would you like to see in this team?
That is a difficult one. I'm going to go with someone. I mean, I can only really go with my own frame of reference, but I'm going to go with Darren Fletcher, because it felt like Darren Fletcher was, he could have quite easily zoned out of playing for Scotland, because at that time Scotland were really, really bad, and he was really only the only top tier player that we had at that time, and he always turned up. You know how a lot of the time with internationals you get players who pull out of friendlies because they can't really be bothered? It tends to be the players who play for the bigger, more illustrious clubs. Darren Fletcher never did that, and so it makes me a little bit sad that we finally got to a tournament and it's after his time. So I would bring him back. I think he would actually kind of improve our midfield as well.
Graham, I'd just like to jump in and apologise if Archie Gamel is listening to this podcast that you chose Darren Fletcher over him.
Did I dare say my unpopular opinion about Archie Gamel's goal
Uh-oh.
Against the Netherlands?
Uh-oh.
It's not that good.
Train spotting has led me to believe that it's the end-all be-all of Scottish football. You're saying that Ewan McGregor lied to me? That Renton lied to me?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the only lie in train spotting from Ewan McGregor.
No.
In that film, yeah. Look, it's a good goal, and it's very much considered the greatest Scottish goal of all time, and that's why I say it's an unpopular opinion, but it's not the best Scottish goal. I preferred James McFadden's against France a few years ago. Thought that was a better goal.
I'm going to have to go look that one up, and then I will probably agree with you, because I don't really have that much vested interest in Archie Gemmell's goal. I do have like a weird idea in my mind that Darren Fletcher and Scott McTominay are somehow related. I think it's the pale, tall lankiness. So I'm just going to say that Darren Fletcher is Scott McTominay's uncle, and if Scott McTominay does well at the Euros, then Darren Fletcher benefits.
Yeah, I definitely get that sense as well. It's also kind of the teacher's pet at Manchester United element as well.
I can see that. Yeah. All right, Joe, for you, who would you like to add? No, I won't ask you about the Scotland team. I will instead ask where your rooting interests lie.
It's hard, man, because here in Phoenix, which is where I live, we didn't have a professional soccer team, really, or certainly not one that was run in a professional way until very recently. There was Arizona United, and then that rebranded, and Didier Drogba came in, and it's a ridiculous story that's been written about, and I've had a chance to write about it a little bit as well. But Didier Drogba comes in, and the ownership group rebrands, and so then it becomes Phoenix Rising, which has been this real powerhouse in USL, in the USL Championship, which is the second division here in the United States. But, I mean, that wasn't around until much later. And so I actually spent more time covering that team than I did rooting for them. And kind of the same with the U.S. national team, because I am most emotionally invested in the U.S. men's national team. And it's a little bit of an awkward relationship because, Taylor, you and I spend so much time talking about it, and I spend time writing about it. And so it's not this traditional fandom by any stretch. But I think I enjoy watching those U.S. games the most.
Yeah, I think I am with you on that one, and that's about where I'm with my fandom lately. It hasn't been helped by Manchester United in the Super League and DC United being DC United. The Richmond Kickers remain the nearest and dearest to my heart. I think I was pulled in when they won the Open Cup in 1995, and then when they had Dwayne DiRosario and Onandi Lowe knocking in goals for them with an insane regularity. I know Onandi Lowe is not a name that anybody is going to get, but that's a player who played 65 times for Jamaica and scored like 30 goals in those 65 appearances. So a very good goal scorer playing for a team that are, I think, now in the third division of the soccer pyramid here in the U.S. The Richmond Kickers are the ones that I always sort of continuously check on, continuously go back to, and then the U.S. national team after that. Ryan, are there teams that you like? I forget.
I've got one. Just one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm not even going to make a joke here. I'm just going to leave it open. Phoenix Rising, of course.
my team, and it always has been my team, is Wimbledon, who are now AFC Wimbledon, of course. It's I've got this inextricable link between my team and my family. I feel like Wimbledon is almost the glue that held my family together and still does in many ways. When my dad was around, it was basically the only thing we would ever talk about. It's basically the most important thing in our house. And I think that's true for a lot of British people as well. My dad started going to see Wimbledon when he was very small. He started taking myself and my brother. My first game that I remember going to was September 1994, and I had to look it up. It was against Leicester. It was a 2-1 win for Wimbledon at Selhurst Park, which is where Crystal Palace play. That's where I had my Premier League season ticket for many years, before lots of unpleasantness, took Wimbledon away. But I mostly associate that with, you know, being with my family, being with my brother and my dad, going on a Saturday in the car to watch soccer. And that's like, really special. We were lucky enough that one of the players who moved to Wimbledon in the late 90s, a guy called Andy Roberts, who was a family friend of ours, he used to give us his away tickets because all the players got an allocation. So we got to go to most away games as well. So that was really, really cool. And I'll say I've been to 2 Champions League finals. I've been to the World Cup. I've been to the Olympics. I've been close to all these very big, significant moments in soccer, but I still don't think anything is as special as going in the car with my family to watch Wimbledon when I was younger. I'm getting a bit emotional. I apologize for that. But I had this weird period in my life when I fell out of love with the game as well. When Wimbledon, if you don't know the story, they were basically franchised and moved away to a city called Milton Keynes. And it was a very, very painful period. Every game leading up to that was protests. And it had a big impact on myself, my family, and everyone in the Wimbledon community. And I went away to college. I went away to university. And I stopped liking soccer for maybe 2 years. I didn't even watch Match of the Day, which for an English person was a really weird thing. I played, but I felt too hurt by the whole situation. So it took me a while to get back into soccer. And I did, and very much went into it professionally shortly after university as well. I'm probably being way too mushy and emotional. But my team is AFC Wimbledon now, Tay-Tay. And I'm a part owner of the club. It's a fan-owned club, as is my brother as well. One weird thing I'll bring up at this point, as we are on the precipice of the Euros. I've been to a lot of games in my life, and I've covered a lot of games. I've never been to an England game. I was not really an England fan growing up as well, because I always had this weird thing where my team is Wimbledon, and I had all these teams coming to visit my team week in and week out, and they had England players on the opposition team. So I'm supposed to boo him then, and then when he puts on a different colour shirt, I'm supposed to cheer him. That never quite reconciled in my mind. And I always associated England fandom and national fandom with that certain brand of nationalism, a certain brand of British person who would, you know, not be the most pleasant person to hang around with, shall we say. I think my love for the England team has grown a lot more since I left England, and sort of it's become part of my identity as, yeah, I am English, and I've become a bit more proud of it with distance, which I think is quite odd.
Yeah, I mean, but I think also if you're like in the midst of it all the time, it becomes your norm, and then your norm is maybe the norm instead of the thing that you enjoy. If you're like having to cover soccer 19 hours a day, it ceases to be that fun thing until you can kind of find the thing that sparks joy, to go with Marie Kondo's approach. You, Ryan, you live in the States, obviously, so maybe less so, but for Graham as well, is it strange to talk about football/soccer with Americans? Because we have definitely talked to people. I won't speak for Joe. I'll speak for myself and just say that I have talked to people on the show and just in regular life who live in England or are from England, and there does tend to be a little bit of like, now, do you know who like Paul Gascoigne is?
Right.
Do you know what football is? Like, and there are occasionally those moments where it's like, oh, you guys, it must be sort of strange to be talking to an American soccer audience.
I think it is strange in some ways, Taylor. And with all due respect, I think it's because there's not this base knowledge, maybe of the European game in particular, that everyone I know grew up with, because, you know, it wasn't broadcast here. And you didn't watch it. It didn't permeate by osmosis into you like it does to most Europeans. And that's perfectly understandable. And I will say the knowledge base of American fans is not to be underestimated, particularly in the last few years as it's become easier to watch games as well. But I equate it, Taylor, to NFL. I got really, really into the NFL when I moved here. And I could tell you anything about most of the teams. I play fantasy religiously. But I couldn't tell you about what happened in the 90s in the NFL because I wasn't there. I didn't know anything about it.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because that is about where I am. Yeah,
yeah. That's just the same with me. So my experience would be the NBA. I watch a lot of NBA basketball, but I feel like, so when I watched The Last Dance, for example, a lot of that was new to me. I knew who Michael Jordan was. I knew who, you know, Scottie Pippen was. I knew who all these people were, but the stories around them, like the flu game, for example, I hadn't heard about that before, despite the fact I would say I am a basketball fan. So, I think it's similar to Ryan. In terms of talking to Americans or North Americans now about soccer of the last, you know, 10, 15 years, I don't think that's strange at all, because you guys have better coverage than we do in the UK.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have all the games live and so on. So there's absolutely, I don't find that strange at all. And I assume that American fans have, you know, as much knowledge, if not more than I do, or any British fans. But same as Ryan, I don't know how much of that kind of historical basis there just because of maybe the lack of coverage that was in the country at that time.
You've just reminded me something, Graham. I've got this is apropos of nothing, but it speaks to my lack of knowledge of US sports going back past when I lived here. I found out this week that Allen Iverson lives in my neighborhood. Like down the street. And I found out because
how nice is your neighborhood?
Yeah, right?
it's okay. He's like two streets over. And he goes to drink in the supermarket. There's a Harris Teeter supermarket. He drinks in the bar there, like all the time, like right by my house. And I only found out this week. And I've lived here for...
Hold on. There's a bar in the supermarket?
Oh my gosh. So the supermarket has an actual bar in it, like fully stocked, loads of craft beers and everything. People get drinks and they put them in the shopping cart and they go and fill it with unnecessary stuff. It's a great marketing gimmick for them.
Ryan, don't let Allen Iverson step over you. Just be careful not to fall down or lay down in his area, or he will viciously step over you like he did to Tyronn Lue, which I'm just now realizing maybe no one in this conversation got that reference. So hopefully someone out there did. Anyway, Simpsons, am I right?
Joe, actually, that kind of gets to the question I was going to ask you, is like, is there a thing? Because I think, Graham and Ryan, you make the very valid point that, like, I can read about what happened in the 90s or the 80s or the 70s, and I can, like, watch documentaries, but there is... It's the same thing as like watching videos on how to fix the thing on YouTube or reading a book about it versus having somebody show you about it. Experiencing it is always going to make it resonate more and be more connective. So with that in mind, Joe, is there a thing that you feel like you are like more steeped in? Is it basketball? It sounds like it might be basketball.
I was a crazy avid NFL watcher and mock draft maker and all these things growing up as a kid. So that's a big one for me. I don't really watch it anymore. I don't have the time, or I don't have the desire, maybe a little bit of both. Basketball has been a constant theme pretty much for me. I played basketball growing up, not very good at it, but I played. I was a big University of Arizona fan growing up as well, because that's where most of my family went to school. And then now, I have been a Suns fan throughout all of their poor seasons here. But now they're making a run in the Western Conference playoffs, and it's been incredible to watch Phoenix fans actually care about it and be able to go and support this team. So yeah, I'm a big basketball guy, and it's even more fun to be a big basketball guy for me right now.
My favorite band, Jimmy Eat World, played at one of the Phoenix Suns games this week. That would have been special.
Ryan, you and I are basically just the same person. Common thread right there, baby.
And this is where I say that my biggest like connection to Arizona basketball would be when Sandra Bullock was wearing their shirt in the movie Speed, and that's how Dennis Hopper called her Wildcat the whole movie.
Taylor, I think it was called The Bus That Couldn't Slow Down.
I apologize. That's definitely how they pitched the second one, while probably high on cocaine. It's like, now they're on a boat, and there we go. Greenlit. Why not? We've gone very long. I don't want to take up too much more of your time, gentlemen. We do have several more questions. We can get to those over the course of the tournament. I think I will leave it to you and I do want to end with this segment on, like, if there's anything you all would like to add or focus on in our coverage. But first, you can answer either of these, Graham. Either your favorite thing or things that you've been watching, consuming TV-wise, movie-wise in the last 6 to 12 months, or your first soccer memory when you knew the sport was for you, the thing that you wanted to kind of keep in your life and stick with.
Okay, so I'm going to go with the non-soccer one, because I feel like my first memory might come up in over the course of the tournament, because it's kind of linked to that. So,
and you're very young. When Archie Gemmell like punched you, and that's why you have this.
Yeah, it was Archie Gemmell from one side and Zlatan Ibrahimovic from the other side, and yeah. So yeah, in terms of non-soccer, because that's probably not going to come up again. This might be recency bias, but I've already. praise it to you guys in the group chat, but I thought Bo Burnham's latest Netflix special was one of the most creative things I've ever seen in my life. And I wouldn't consider, you know, that meme with football fans where it's like, not a fan of Club X, but this is class, clap emoji. Yeah, that was a little bit like me with Bo Burnham. I didn't think he had something as creative as that in him. Also loved Soul, the Pixar film. Oh, yeah. I loved the soundtrack by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. Thought that really added something to it. Music-wise, the new Mogwai album was one of my favourites or has been one of my favourites of this year. And the worst thing I've seen this year was the Friends reunion.
No Corden fan, huh?
Well, no, actually, but that wasn't the worst thing about it. So I said about the Bo Burnham thing that it was so creative. I just thought the Friends thing was really... I actually don't have anything against Friends. It's just I thought it was really quite...
Graham, Justin Bieber was wearing an armadillo costume. What's not creative about that?
Yeah. Well, no one's worked out why he was even invited, to be honest.
Was it just a, like, them getting together to talk about the show? Did they actually do an episode? Like, what was the approach there?
So I was under the impression until about 2 hours before I watched it that it was an extra episode, but it was essentially just like a chat show, like James Corden on a sofa, like very much the Graham Norton style of like all of them all together chatting. And they did have kind of like script reads, and they did walk around the sets, and those were the best bits when they just left them to walk around the set. But it was strange and not very good, and all of their faces are now very strange and weird.
Is that called getting old?
Sorry?
Is that called getting old, Graham?
Yeah, so
when your face gets weird? Yeah.
I mean, that and injecting a bunch of stuff into your
face. Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah. So Matt LeBlanc, he's fine. The other ones have done some strange things to their appearance.
Graham, there's a name that you mentioned there, and I'm just going to leave this out there, and if it's 3 seconds of silence and then we move on, so be it. The name I would like to mention to Graham and Ryan is James Corden.
I like him. I think Gavin and Stacey's one of the best TV shows that's ever been made.
All right. That doesn't seem to be the most popular opinion.
I know that
in Britain,
people are rubbed up by his personality. I know people who've been in his company have not enjoyed it, shall we say. And there are a lot of stories like that. But I find him fine.
And Graham stays silent. Good to know. All right. Joe, what about you? Either thing or things you've been enjoying over the last 6 to 12 months, or what's the thing that got you into soccer that made you want to stick with it?
Okay, I'm going to do both quick, because the thing I've been enjoying, it's not a TV show, it's a podcast I've been listening to. It's called Home Cooking, and it's just it was started during quarantine by just two lovely folks. And they were talking about how to make the most of that time during the early stages of the pandemic. And then they kept it going, and it's kind of dropped off now, but I'm just now catching up, and that's been awesome. Taylor, you and I have talked about bread a lot on this podcast, and that for me, bread and cooking have become real joys for me and real sources of joy over the last year and a half or so. So that's one thing that I've been really enjoying to consume media wise. And then the moment where I knew soccer was for me, I guess, if that's an appropriate way to rephrase the question. This is not a traditional answer to this question, but the first soccer game I ever covered in person was the 2019 January camp game between the U.S. men's national team and Berhalter's first ever game against Panama here in Phoenix. It was then called University of Phoenix Stadium, but it's changed now. And I was there, and I'd never done that before. I'd never seen all these big media people before, and so it was a little bit daunting for me. And I'm getting settled in before the game, and one guy I've never seen before comes over and talks to me. And he was writing for Kicker, I think. That's a thing, right, in Germany especially? Yes. And he asks, what do you cover? And I tell him, well, I'm here to write about the tactics of this game, because that's what I do. And he went on this five-minute tangent monologue about how people who never played soccer professionally shouldn't write about tactics, and how I didn't know anything. And that for me, I wasn't discouraged by that. I just kind of knew immediately, wow, this guy doesn't really know what he's talking about. Like, I can do this, and I know so many coaches out there that have done this, that have not played at a high level, but are coaching ridiculously quality teams at a professional level. And so that, for me, was almost a challenge, that I took it as a challenge to continue to learn more and get deeper and deeper involved in soccer. So that's not really a I fell in love watching my childhood team play kind of thing. That's even better, probably. But that childhood team thing is even better. But it is my own personal version of that, I guess.
Do you know this person's name? Do you remember who it was?
I can't remember.
Are you just being classy?
No, I don't remember. Even if I did, I wouldn't
Shame
be super
them.
Keen to share it. But yeah, it was a weird interaction, like a really genuinely strange interaction that I guess motivated me a little bit. And it's worn off at this point now. I just love it. But it did help me motivate. It did help motivate me at that time.
There's like a 10% chance it was Manuel Vaith, I feel like.
It was not. I know
okay.
that.
All right.
It's a real straw man argument, though, isn't it? If I'm going to write about Formula One, do I have to have driven a supercar at 200 miles an hour?
And there are things that I can't understand or that I don't understand because I haven't been around a professional team or haven't played. There are skills that people out there that have played, they have, that I don't have. And I recognize that. And I'm always at a disadvantage. We're all at a disadvantage for not having played when we talk about this game. But we have a different perspective. And I think that perspective is still valuable.
Yeah, Joe, that's where I am with it, is that, like, I do think if you have and I'm not saying you do, but if there is a complete reliance on stats and here's what happened, I do think, like, if people haven't played soccer before, not even like at a competitive level, but there are just certain things that if you're playing at amateur level, you know, like, oh, this, like I know when, like, the defender is getting close enough to me that I can feel that pressure and when I need to turn and not. And, like, having that sort of experience, and then certainly having that experience as, like, a professional, I think does give you a different perspective. But that's what we like on this show. That's why we do the show the way we do, is we want, it's why we're doing this show right now, literally, is because we want different perspectives and different approaches to, I think, then if Joe's bringing an analytical one and then Graham has a thought about, like, well, I remember it, like, in this way, like, you want there to be that sort of back and forth. And I think to go back to the, like, what is this show? If you're new to it, I don't think you're going to get a ton of, like, no, you're totally wrong, this guy's the best of all time. No, you're totally wrong, this guy's the best. That I don't find as fun. I don't really get as much out of that. But I think having interesting and interested conversations about players and teams and approaches to things is fundamentally, I think, what this show is about. So that's my little soapbox for a moment. But thank you for telling that story. And I do think it's pretty common that people get insulted in their first games, because I definitely had that exact same experience.
But you were wearing, like, a Hawaiian shirt and shorts.
I was wearing
shorts,
a flannel shirt and
right?
shorts, maybe, and maybe some sandals. Yeah, and maybe somebody called me out for that one. Yes,
I had pants on, Taylor. Come on, man. This is not the same thing.
All right. In my defense, before that, I had covered the, like, International Champions Cup or whatever it was back then, those preseason friendlies. So I showed up to those in a sport coat and a shirt and a button-up shirt. And I think it was maybe Philly, and it was like 110 degrees, and I had to walk to the stadium, and I was just dripping sweat. And when I got there, everybody there was wearing Hawaiian shirts, because it was all people from the daily newspapers in England getting to basically have a free vacation in the United States to cover these teams on their preseason tours. And so they were treating it as such. But I assumed that's how people dress. And then I showed up for my first U.S. national team game, and that is not how people dress in the press box. And I learned that quickly. I also learned that in the Ravens Stadium, they have frozen Snickers when you get your press meal.
What?
And that informed every single stadium experience from then on for me, that if you don't have a frozen Snickers, you will never be as good as Baltimore.
So true.
Did you say frozen Snickers?
Yeah, man. Have you not experienced a frozen Snickers, Ryan Bailey, despite your time in the United States?
I value my teeth.
It's an ice cream bar.
Is it any different from an ice cream? Yes, it's just a Snickers ice cream.
Oh, you don't mean literally it's frozen solid or anything?
No, yeah, it's a block of ice. You have to chisel it out. And then once you chisel it out, you eat the wrapper as well.
Okay.
It's very, very bland and slightly plasticky.
Ryan, you've got to have had some good media stadium food at some of the games you've been at. Like a Champions League final. What food do you get there?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Prawn sandwich grade all around. Yeah. Particularly if you're a guest of someone like Adidas. Sorry, Adidas. I just slipped into my American accent for a moment there. Yeah, you definitely get some very good stuff. I've had some sit-down meals, Graham. Like Stamford Bridge. Have you been to Stamford Bridge, Graham? Oh, it's good.
No, I haven't. No, it's one of the few stadiums in England I haven't been to.
It's a treat. It's a treat.
The Sanders Stadium had a Starbucks in the press area, and that was pretty solid.
Yeah, that's
as well.
Amazing.
I was a big fan of that one.
So Seattle as well is perfect.
That is true. And Dusseldorf. I loved our trip in the Bundesliga. The Dusseldorf Stadium was rough times. Rough times in Dusseldorf. Ryan, where's your worst meal you've had?
In a stadium? You want me to call it out?
Yeah, what was it? Oh, what was the food?
I think probably White Hart Lane, because the old White Hart Lane is a dump. And was a dump and deserved to be knocked down. I went to a Champions League game, the Tottenham Inter Milan, the Gareth Bale Taxi for Mycon game, I think it was. And I remember it being like stuff they got out of the freezer section of the supermarket kind of situation.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And Ryan, that same final question, either way you want to take it, favorite thing you've been watching or favorite soccer memory?
I probably have covered the soccer memory stuff in talking about my formative years, so I'll go straight to my media fun and games, if that's okay, Tay-Tay. Of the TV shows I've been watching lately, my favorites, I think Ted Lasso was absolutely superb.
And
I was all geared up to think it would be terrible and cheesy. And my brother texted me recently, and I thought he wouldn't have liked it at all, but he was like, "Have you seen this Ted Lasso? It's the most incredible thing." And I thought he was the last person who might have engaged with an American soccer coach coming over to the UK kind of situation. So very much recommend that. Letterkenny, I've been really into. After Schitt's Creek, I wanted to get my Canadian comedy fix. That's on Hulu. Letterkenny is absolutely excellent. And if you want something else that packs in a lot of jokes and is very dense like that, Girls Five Ever is on Peacock at the moment. It's like, I don't know if you like 30 Rock or Kimmy Schmidt, it's a Tina Fey thing, so it's very similar, silly sense of humor, but it all very densely packed in. I thoroughly, thoroughly recommend that. And it's got Sarah Bareilles in it, who is very, very talented indeed. Looking at movies, I will double down on Graham's recommendation of Soul. I thought that was absolutely wonderful. In terms of music, I think the album that got me through the pandemic was Haim's album, Women in Music Part 3, which I've worn a hole in it, if that's possible, for a digital download. I think that's absolutely wonderful and is going to hold up. And I'm gutted they haven't actually been able to tour that album at all. I think they're just about to start doing that. And other podcasts, I don't listen to any other podcasts. I'm kidding.
is correct.
I'm really into comedy improv. And I know you like this too, Taylor. Mm-hmm. Comedy Bang Bang and the whole Earwolf studio stuff. I'm really into that kind of stuff. So those are my recommendations / things I have been liking outside of the beautiful game.
I will say it made me very happy when Ryan, I was the first one I think I can remember to ever point out that I do indeed take most of my ad read approach, not the rambling so much, but the introduction from Scott Aukerman when I'm doing my ad read.
This episode is sponsored by.
That is correct. Let me just hit mute on Ryan's mic and Graham's mic to say Ryan and Graham also have gone on at length about how much they enjoy Love Island. They've watched every season. They have lots of thoughts about it. I think they're running a blog about how much they enjoy it. Gentlemen, if you disagree with what I just said, go ahead and talk real fast. So if you're hearing this, we have just had to restart the recording because it turns out the software we were using does not allow you to unmute the guests. So my hilarious practical joke backfired spectacularly. And since I'm editing, I now get to deal with bridging those two files. Graham and Ryan, I apologize for linking you to Love Island. And I feel like I've been punished accordingly.
Taylor, I think
that's what you get.
Yeah, you just missed the 15 minutes I did on why I love Love Island so much. You're never going to hear it again.
Oh my god! I mentioned once that like my wife had that on as I walked through the room, and both of you were just like, "I've never felt more judged in a friendly way, but more like, oh no, like you all were not okay with that at all." So I appreciate that. I appreciate you all tolerating my attempts to mute you and be funny, and instead it backfiring spectacularly. Last thing before I let you all go, I did ask earlier about like anything that you all would like to bring to the review shows that we're doing. Doesn't need to be like a full segment or anything like that, but if people are sort of listening to those episodes, are there things that you tend to want to focus on or maybe haven't been able to talk about as much in other episodes of this show or elsewhere that you would like to with the coming European Championships, or just sort of generally speaking, Graham, what is your approach when it comes to reviewing games? What do you like to talk about? What do you want to focus on?
Yeah, so I think specifically, if I can mention one thing that Taylor and I, we've already spoken about privately, is I think we're going to try and do a soccer 101 on Scotland, kind of what happened for the last 30 years and why are we now at a major tournament again? Why are we now producing seemingly good players again and what happened? So, I think as a single issue story, and I'm very much on board with kind of the single issue format of exploring a story a little bit more in depth. Because obviously when we do the weekend review, it's, you know, you maybe don't get the time to talk about a single issue as much. So that's one. I don't know when particularly my schedule is going to allow for it, but I think I'd quite like to get that one in the book. And during a major tournament, one of the things that I always look for, and it's not always related to the soccer, and we won't spend too much time on this, I promise, but there's always strange stuff that happens in a major tournament. So one of the things that sticks in my mind is Robbie Williams doing the Russian opening ceremony 3 years ago at the World Cup. I mean, they do know that there have been pop stars since the early 2000s, don't they, Russia?
Really? Name one.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, so I always think it's kind of like the Eurovisionification of a major tournament, where one of the best things about Eurovision is you're not actually really commenting on the quality of the songs or the music. It's yeah. all the other stuff that happens. And I think there is an element of that with major tournaments, whether it's the broadcasts or the opening ceremonies or whatever. And that's one of the things I always look forward to with major tournaments.
All right. I like it. What about you, Joe?
I'll be bringing as much tactical analysis as I can without having it be boring. Hopefully we can bring that in an entertaining kind of way. It'll be easier on one game days versus three game days. So it might vary a little bit from week to week. I enjoy the different combination of voices and of backgrounds and of perspectives that we have, especially with the four of us. Taylor, you and I tend to be slightly towards the analysis side, and Graham likes to poke out that chaos and to point out that chaos and also bring in some of that as well. And then Ryan can do a little bit of everything. So I think it works out quite well. As far as like directions to take the show, Taylor, you and I have talked about this before. I think doing some more long form stuff would be really interesting and branching out and doing some different stories and narrative based shows outside the feed or inside. I don't know the model of that, but that's really interesting to me outside of the tactical realm that I often operate in.
All right. I'm excited to explore that as well, for sure. Maybe once we're able to sleep and not watch soccer for like 9 straight hours, we can yes. focus on those things. But yeah, I'm with you on that one.
Yes.
Ryan, for you, what are the areas you want to bring to the show, or you want to focus on that maybe we haven't talked about as much?
I'm pretty happy with the focus we have now, Taylor. I think Joe summed it up very nicely of what we all bring to the show. But what I would like to kind of serialize and bring in is I'm working on a soccer rock opera at the moment. It's called Soccerama.
Please let this be true.
It's a character-driven piece, so it's going to be very intricate. I'm at about the 3-hour stage with it at the moment, so we'll find a space for me to let that be broadcast here, if that's okay.
Here is the only reason why I'm confident in saying that this is not real, is because if it were me doing it, it would be at least 3 hours long. Ryan Bailey's rock opera is like a tight 120, is my guess.
120 months? Yeah.
All right. On that note, I will say, Graham Ruthven, thank you very much for being so generous with your time to talk about yourself and your background and your interests and all that good stuff. It's very much appreciated.
No problem at all. I'm looking forward to the next few weeks.
Yeah, as am I. Joe Lowry, the same to you over there in the desert with the basketball and the football, but also the analytics and tactics and mean Germans talking about your tactical mouse.
Thanks for having me, Taylor, as always.
And Ryan, you've been okay.
Love to your mothers.
Ryan, sincerely, I think I always end up being like catty sarcastic towards Ryan. I think probably because I have the longest relationship with Ryan. But it is the case that Ryan has made the show better, my life easier, and I always enjoy it. And when I'm able to catch the Simpsons references, because they sometimes are very deep cuts, I appreciate those as well.
Yeah, whatever.
Turnabout's fair play. All right, gentlemen, thank you all so much, listeners. We have more Euro previews coming. Joe and I are going to be reviewing the USA Costa Rica friendly, and then we have the start of the European Championships. But until then, thank you all very much for listening, and we will talk to you all again very soon.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman, and I'm here to tell you what The Athletic has planned across its podcast network during the Euros. My pod with David Ornstein will become the Athletics England show throughout the tournament to bring you all the latest news and insight from inside the England camp every single day. Then we'll also have nightly editions of the Totally Football show, taking a look at all the big talking points from the competition and looking ahead to the next day's fixtures. Now, if you're feeling nostalgic for tournaments past, we've produced an 8-part documentary series that tells some fascinating stories from both on and off the pitch from the last 8 Euros. Elsewhere, Michael Cox's Zonal Marking Pod will offer an in-depth tactical breakdown of all the biggest games, while Adam Hurry's Football Cliché Show will take a look at the tournament's alternative storylines. So, as this never-ending domestic season finally draws to a close, we'll have plenty of Euro 2020 coverage for you to enjoy as the tournament gets underway in just a couple of weeks' time.